Welcome to the AJP Heart and Sarc podcast. I'm Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss a new study by Chasland et al. Titled Testosterone and Exercise: Effects on Fitness, Body Composition, and Strength in Middle to Older Aged Men with Low Normal Serum Testosterone Levels. This article was published March 19, 2021. Joining us today are Associate Editor Jason Carter, author Lauren Chasland, and expert Megan Wenner. Let's get started.
Thanks so much, Kara. The global prevalence of testosterone deficiency is estimated to be as high as 40% depending on age and threshold levels used. And there's a dramatic rise in testosterone deficiency in men as they reach the fourth and fifth decades of life. Interestingly, this time also coincides with when men begin to experience precipitous declines in both aerobic exercise capacity and muscular strength. In the present study, Chasland and colleagues evaluated the impact of both testosterone and exercise on fitness, body composition, and strength in men between the ages of 50 to 70 years of age. Lauren, I really appreciated the careful and rigorous experimental approach you took in looking at both the independent and combined impacts of testosterone and exercise. Could you briefly recap the experimental approach and your primary findings for us?
Thanks for the introduction and the opportunity to chat today about our recent work. So for our study, we recruited men between 50 and 70 years with a waist circumference of greater than 95 centimeters and a total serum testosterone level between 6 and 14 nanomoles per liter, which is generally considered to be at the low end of normal for men in this age bracket. So amongst other things, we screened out men with known cardiovascular disease and a history of prostate cancer, and all our participants underwent a full medical examination with an endocrinologist before being randomized to one of four groups. So physiological testosterone treatment combined with exercise training, testosterone without any additional exercise, placebo with exercise, and of course, placebo without any additional exercise. And this was over 12 weeks. So our primary outcome was aerobic capacity or VO2 peak. And we found that exercise was the main driver for improvement, and that testosterone alone didn't impact this, nor was it additive to the effect of exercise. When we looked at our body composition results assessed using DEXA, again, we saw greater decreases in fat mass with exercise than testosterone alone or the combination of testosterone and exercise. And that was specifically for total fat mass, visceral adipose tissue, and leg fat mass. Our lean mass results were interesting as we found an effect of exercise and of testosterone to increase total lean mass. Of note, we also saw the greatest increase in total lean mass was when testosterone and exercise were both combined. When we looked a little deeper, we saw that testosterone alone increased leg lean mass, which could potentially have implications for older men who may be unable to exercise due to disease or disability. In terms of upper and lower body strength, again, we saw consistent main effects for exercise, but not for testosterone. However, when we looked further at our leg press results, we saw there was a potential additive effect for adding testosterone to the exercise intervention. So overall, we concluded that an exercise program is likely to be more beneficial than taking exogenous testosterone in isolation to improve aerobic fitness, muscular strength, and body composition in middle to older age men with low normal serum T concentrations over 12 weeks. However, in populations for whom exercise is difficult, maybe there is some limited benefit of T treatment alone to increase lean mass.
Thanks so much, Lauren. I noticed that your study utilized a daily testosterone cream that was applied transdermally, as opposed to gels, patches, or even intramuscular injection. For our listeners who may not be as familiar with all of these competing approaches for testosterone supplementation, can you explain for us why you chose the testosterone cream? And do you think delivery method matters? And my motivation for that second part of that question is that I'm familiar with some data in postmenopausal women where the mode of delivery of estrogen replacement therapy had an impact on some of the measures for autonomic function.
Yes, great question. So as you mentioned, we did use a testosterone cream for our 12-week study, and we chose this delivery method as we wanted a formulation of testosterone that was readily available and could maintain stable concentrations of testosterone over that period of time. So that was the reason we didn't use an intramuscular injection. And in regards to testosterone patches, some men have problems with skin irritation, so we decided on a transdermal cream that the participants applied daily to the torso area. And to answer the second part of your question, yes, I think delivery mode definitely does matter. Often intramuscular injections produce supraphysiological concentrations for several days after the injection. And so there is research to suggest that this treatment modality is associated with greater improvements in lean mass and strength. So really it's promising that despite using a transdermal physiological T-dose, we found T alone improved leg lean mass and was potentially additive to exercise for the outcomes of total fat mass and leg press strength. But we definitely cannot exclude that a higher dose of T or maybe a different treatment modality may have resulted in a greater relative impact.
Great, thanks so much. Megan, you've done a lot of work in the area of sex steroids and even led what I thought was a great point-counterpoint debate in our APS sister journal, the Journal of Applied Physiology, recently on the appropriateness of controlling for the menstrual cycle in experimental designs. Could you tell us your impressions of this study as it relates to the bigger picture of aging and health in men? And what particularly stood out to you as something valuable and impactful for the field?
Thanks, Jason. We all know that there can be a whole host of unfavorable changes in health as we age. And sometimes I think too often, we look for a simple, easy fix or a magic bullet, so to speak, that will fix our ailment. There's been a lot of attention in recent years on sex hormones and aging in both men and women. For a number of years, the focus was on estrogen in postmenopausal women. But recently, there's been a shift in focus and understanding the age-related changes in testosterone in men. And this hasn't been met without controversy either as to whether it's safe or detrimental. So I want to commend Lauren on a great study that was well-controlled, which helps add to our knowledge of the effects of testosterone therapy in older men. And while testosterone treatment did have favorable effects on lean mass, the findings of the study continue to support how beneficial exercise is. And you're showing in your study with your data how potent exercise can be for health. And we know that this becomes particularly important as we age.
Thanks, Megan. I've got a question here that I'd like both of you to respond to. And we'll start with you, Lauren, and then go to Megan. There remains a healthy tension between pharmacological and non-pharm approaches to overall health, whether it's exercise, nutrition, stress, or even my own bread and butter of sleep. It's a legitimate debate as to staying the course with behavioral interventions, using some sort of pharmacological or supplemental intervention, or some combination of behavioral and pharm. So when is the right time to consider pharmacological treatment or supplementation from an age perspective? And you mentioned a little bit about this earlier, Lauren. What are your respective thoughts on that debatable and key issue?
Yeah, that's a great question again. And I completely agree that each of the components you've mentioned play a really important role in maintaining or even better improving overall health. As for when the right time or age is to consider pharmacological interventions and specifically testosterone, I think it's really important to remember that worldwide testosterone supplementation is indicated for men with pathological androgen deficiency. So that is an underlying condition affecting the hypothalamus, testes or pituitary. So in that light, if men develop concerning symptoms, it's important that they see their medical professional regardless of age or timing. As for the age-related decline in testosterone levels, and that's where this all sits at the moment, I think our results and those of others strongly show, especially over 12 weeks, exercise is the main driver for improvement. However, for various reasons, not everyone can exercise, and this may be due to disease or disability. So perhaps when the role of exercise needs to be reduced or in fact removed from the equation for whatever reason, the importance of pharmacological treatments may come more into the spotlight.
Thanks, Lauren. Megan, what are your thoughts?
So I definitely think it's not a one-size-fits-all approach, but it seems like early intervention seems to be key, and maybe that has to do with taking advantage of the plasticity of the system. And for reasons we still don't understand, when we think about women, postmenopausal women don't always seem to see the same beneficial effects of exercise that we see in older men related to certain aspects of the cardiovascular system or with weight loss. And that could be related to estrogen deprivation, but it's likely multifactorial. There's also likely genetic factors that will probably need to be considered as we continue to study this area. But when thinking of timing, we also need to consider of time of day as well. Jason, you know a lot more about this than I do, but we've learned a great deal about clock genes over the past few years and how important circadian balance is. So from a therapeutic standpoint, is there a best time of day to maximize the effect of a specific therapeutic or behavioral intervention like exercise? We also know that there are sex differences in clock genes. So as we continue to seek answers to these questions, I think we need to make sure that we consider sex as an important factor in our study designs.
Thanks so much, Megan. And I couldn't agree more. I really appreciate you bringing into the circle circadian rhythm and when timing of day might be appropriate. We just finished up a EB symposium recently where one of the questions centered on what's the right time to exercise and does that impact sleep? And there's just a lot of unanswered questions there. Are there other aspects of the study that you would like to highlight that we haven't discussed today?
Given the topical nature of testosterone and its questionable association with cardiovascular risk, I'd also just like to mention that we have published another two papers from our study concerning vascular health and function, assessed using flow-mediated dilation and 24-hour ambulatory blood pressure. Briefly, we did not find any additional benefit of adding physiological testosterone treatment to supervised exercise training for either of these measures. So bringing all our results together, if middle to older age men with testosterone levels at the low end of normal can exercise, then overall, this is likely to be more beneficial than exogenous T treatment over 12 weeks.
Oh, that's, I think, really relevant.
I really enjoyed those studies, Lauren, so I'm glad you brought them up. I was wondering if you would comment on the exercise intervention you used in the study. I noticed you implemented a circuit type of training, which included a mix of resistance training as well as aerobic exercise. Traditionally, most of the exercise training literature that I've come across typically focuses on one type of exercise, for example, aerobic only or resistance only. Can you comment on the volume of training used in your study and if you think the combination of exercises impact your findings related to other studies?
Yes, great question again. So the exercise intervention we used was a circuit style training intervention. So the men would cycle for 45 seconds on a cycloergometer. They'd then have 15 seconds to move to one of the weights machines where they would lift for 45 seconds. And then they have another 15 seconds to move back to the bike. So the sessions themselves, they had to attend a minimum of two, maximum of three sessions per week. So we decided to use the combination of the aerobic and the resistance because we were targeting both these outcomes with the study, both looking at the aerobic fitness and the lean mass and fat mass, as well as strength. And we've also used this type of intervention numerous times in various populations when we have been looking at vascular function, and we've found that it does induce adaptations quite quickly, so within that 12 weeks. So that was the main reasons that we used that sort of exercise intervention.
Lauren, could you comment on the adherence rates within the study?
Yeah, sure. So participants were very compliant with their study medication, regardless of whether they were on the active cream, so testosterone or placebo. And we also had great adherence to the exercise sessions, with more than 95% of participants attending twice weekly and 80% for those attending three times per week.
Thanks. No, I think it's really interesting. And I think you had a great study. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you, Lauren and Megan, for joining us on this podcast. And Lauren, again, congratulations on a wonderful study. Back to you, Kara.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the AJP Heart and Circ podcast. Our theme music was written and performed by Ray Mitchell. Catch the latest episodes of our podcast at physiology.org/journal/AJP Heart.